We have to mention those shorts that Ian was wearing on Friday night in Glasgow. Is he getting those tailor made or something?
I think they're painted, are they?
Painted on.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe, and I'm Eimear Considine, and I'm joined in studio by Fergus McFadden and James Tracy Leinster and Ireland Hooker. James has gladly come in and kindly agreed to stay and do the full show with us after Eben Elizabeth picked up a concussion and unfortunately can't join us on the show today. Thank you so much for coming in, James.
No worries, Eimear. Thanks for having us.
We'll chat about the Pro 14, and we're going to mention the reports linking the Jaguars to a surprise switch to European rugby. But we'll start with your game at the weekend. How are you feeling? How's the body going after that?
Yeah, oh, good. Glamorous fixture in Rodney Parade. Yeah, we've had it's a bit of a banana skin to go there and lose some points. So we're delighted to come out of there with a bonus point win. We conceded a decent few tries, so it's plenty of work to be done there. But with the conditions, we're pretty happy with 5 points.
Is that their usual type of like tactics, just to slow teams like Leinster down?
I think it's everyone's like tactics to slow the other team down. But yeah, the conditions definitely didn't lend themselves to like a free flowing game, and the pitch was like a mirage. You walked out, you looked like it was like perfectly flat, and then you put your foot in, and it was like water coming up around your feet, and that slows you down a bit. But we dug in and got a good result. So yes,
happy. The away fixture though, like it's definitely one that I don't miss from retiring. Like we were talking just before we came on the show, Trace, that like, I think there was one time in the 10 years where we went away and I remember being sunny over there. So always a tough one, and particularly at this time when the lads have a lot of the internationals away, but in fairness, the depth that the boys have at the moment. So it was a good performance by the lads.
And is it still strange walking out into the crowd, or like lack of crowd, like walking onto the pitch? Does it feel like a training session, or are you well used to this stage that this is how it is?
Yeah, it's never going to be normal, I think. I said before, like it's like even at an under fives game, like if your parents roaring at you, like running up and down the sideline or whatever, and like gives you a bit of atmosphere. But it's not great, to be honest.
At least you still have Ronan O'Donnell.
Yeah, exactly. The only running up and down the side.
He gets pretty vocal, to be honest.
apart from the bit of energy you get from the lads in the extended squad and the backroom staff, like it's pretty dead, to be honest, and probably not something anyone wants to get used to.
No, and I think for viewers at home, it's nice to hear that, like the what goes on in the scrums and the ref chat and G, and you can actually hear almost everything. It's nice. It's a different type of thing that like people like us at home wouldn't have got to watch or to hear, and you can really like see the leaders and hear the leaders, I suppose, through the mic, which is a nice thing as well. Frigg, the main talking point about this game, I suppose, was that the two Byrne brothers were starting together, one at 10 and one at 12. How do you think that went?
Yeah, well, I saw Harry was poking a bit of fun at Ross on Instagram there. He put up a picture of the two of them standing side by side and saying, good to teach the wee man a couple of things or something like that, which is funny because I think he's a small bit taller than him. But yeah, it was cool to see the Byrne brothers get a game starting together, because, you know, Ross proved that he can, you know, play 12 or 13. Like he filled in that game, I think, around a month ago and had a great game there. That's, you know, we all know the 10 is his best position, but sometimes if you can get those two distributors on the field, like it's very, very hard. And I know that game wouldn't be a good example because it was so hard to throw the ball around. Yeah. But, exciting. I'd say it could be a bit more comfortable at the Sunday dinners if they're both in the team as opposed to them trying to kick each other off the team. So,
can you see the rivalry of training between them?
It's brotherly rivalry. I don't think it's like a direct rivalry, but even if they're like they play like cricket in their living room and stuff like that, like they're always competing with each other, but it's all in good jest or whatever. Which, yeah, like on the golf course in the living room, I think the competition never stops the two of them. But luckily for us, they're both pretty good at everything they do, so we're benefiting from that.
Absolutely. Can you tell that like from a long time, people have been speaking about Harry Byrne and Ross Byrne, obviously, but more so people talking about Harry before he even made it. Like, how hard as that as a player, that people are looking at Harry for the, as the next, you know, Irish out half, and he, that was his, you know, first time starting with Ross. He hasn't, has he played Champions Cup? Has he started Champions Cup yet? No.
Not yet. So, starting the Northampton game, he pulled out with a back spasm.
Back spasm.
But like, it's a lot to, you know, there's a lot been put on his shoulders, and he hasn't even been on that stage yet.
Yeah, well, I think he'd be the first to admit, like, he's behind Ross. So, like, you know, people can say what they want in the media and stuff like that, but Ross is ahead of Harry, and he's proved himself over a number of years now. He's almost like a bit of a leader in there, a younger level, but the same as Johnny, you know, he marshals the boys really well, and I'm sure Harry is still learning off him. So Harry's had great performances for Leinster with the opportunity he's gotten, but there's a stepping stone to it. You know, he does have to play a couple of times at European level, I think, to kind of prove himself before people start talking about him in a test environment.
Yeah, there's a lot of players like that, that, you know, there's a lot of pressure put on them and they still haven't done the step-by-step. And I'm not saying you have to do a step-by-step approach and you have to tick this box and this box and this box to get there, but it would definitely help as a player to, like, have it behind your head, you know, I'm good enough to be here because I've done X, Y and Z, as opposed to being thrown in to the deep end.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the great thing about sport, isn't it, that we can all kind of talk about the different possible combinations and what's the most exciting and what's going to work, whether it's rugby or football or whatever, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion on that. And as I said, like, we're just lucky that, like, they're both class in their own way. So lucky to have both of them on our team.
Another man I think you're very lucky to have is Jack Conan, another man of the match performance from him at the weekend. Is he somebody that we could see being brought into the Irish squad ahead of the Italian game?
Yeah, it's delighted for Jack. He put in another big performance, and it shows his kind of character that he's done so after being left out by Ireland, and he's had a tricky year with injury. You know, he picked up a man of the match performance against the Scarlets away, and again against the Dragons, like two tough games. When, you know, people forget during this time, even though Leinster have such strength and depth, like when there's guys coming in from camp that haven't been in using different calls, other guys that were there, and the disruption throughout a week, it can be quite hard to put, you know, an all-round performance in. I think Jack is getting back to his best again. I've no doubt he will get plenty more caps into the future, but I'd say you'd be looking at an injury before he breaks back into the Irish squad, because Andy seems fairly happy with the back rows that are there.
Yeah, absolutely. Ulster had another great win away, 19-13 over Glasgow Warriors, with Craig Gilroy and Mike Lowry getting the all-important tries. They unfortunately didn't manage to get the bonus point. How, I suppose, lucky or unlucky for them, you know, as a Leinster man, they're right behind you. They really, really needed that bonus point win to stay within reach of you guys.
Yeah, there's still plenty of season to go, though. It's obviously not the perfect outcome for them, but they're a really good side, and they'll keep ticking over. Like, they've had a really good season so far, so I'm sure there'll be plenty more opportunities to pick up points.
Absolutely, and 11th try assist of the season for John Cooney. He's doing all he can in an Ulster jersey, really, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's just got a few strings to his bow, doesn't he? That other nines, in terms of the kicking, that other nines maybe don't really, really have. But in saying that, Luke McGrath was outstanding for Leinster as well. So I think when you look at those two scrum halves, it shows the depth we have there. And, you know, those guys just got to keep knocking on the door. I think Luke, again, played brilliant the other night and against the Scarlets. And John Cooney's been playing brilliantly for Ulster. So who's to say that one of those two guys wouldn't break back into the Irish squad before the end of the Six Nations if there's an injury or two?
Especially with Conor Murray, I suppose, with that hamstring injury as well, that, you know, we don't know how bad it is, really. But we must mention our very own Ian Madigan, and he was one of the standout players for Ulster at the weekend, starting at out half and really pulling the strings. He even played a bit of emergency scrum half near the very end of the game. He was actually third choice scrum half in that 2015 World Cup.
Yeah, he was probably in Joe's ear there before Joe picked the squad to go up.
I can play there.
Half and a goal kick and X, Y, and Z. But I think he actually did. I think Mads did play. I'm sure he'll tell us when he's back on the show definitively. But I think he did play nine for quite a bit when he was growing up, because
right,
we all know he's a bit of a short arse. But sure, his skills are so good. You can kind of throw Mads in any. He is one of those players you could throw him in any position in the back line. So I definitely say he'd rate himself as a nine as well.
We have to mention those shorts that Ian was wearing on Friday night in Glasgow. Is he getting those tailor-made or something?
I think they're painted, are they?
Painted on them. Yeah, he must have been rummaging through Anna, his fiance's drawers before he got out there or something.
Like, Anna's a makeup artist. I think she might have painted them on before he went over. But if you're gonna flaunt them. He's rocking it, so
he absolutely is. He's proud of them for sure. On Saturday, the Irish province has made it 4 from 4 as Munster beat Edinburgh and Connacht had a bonus point win over Cardiff. James, did you happen to see any of those games?
I caught the end of the Connacht game. I think the weather forecast was due to be pretty bad, and it wasn't as bad as a bit of wind, but they did pretty well. They just muscled them up at the end of the game, really, and kind of put the pressure on them that way, and got a few tries, so it was good.
Alex Wooten is a winger that I think you would have seen in your nightmares, I think, with the speed that he has. Did you play against him?
What are you trying to say?
He's just... How slow he is.
Jeez, I forgot you're Usain Bolt yourself.
I'm just going on what you said.
Someone's
really
slow like you, obviously. Very true.
Well, someone with a headband that just can't run very quickly.
No, winger with a headband, come on. You know, thought he was in the second row there. You said with your retirement and that, you know, that these kind of players are the ones that, you know, gave you the nudge on the way out. But did you ever play against Alex Wooten? He actually had 2 tries at the weekend. He's some pace on him.
Yeah, he is. He's got the kind of electric pace that you can't put a price on that as a winger. And I think he's done very well since he's gone to Connacht from Munster. I did mark him in a game once, I think, either coming off the bench or he came off the bench. And yeah, one of those guys just with that X factor of pace. And I think you've seen maybe him, his form improving, just getting that repeated game time in Connacht. Mm-hmm. He was probably in and out with Munster. And I think some players, that's all they need before they can kick on again.
Yeah, he's done really well since he signed, and I think he was on loan from Munster to Connacht. But there's been quite a few of those boys that have really flourished in Connacht, that like they're getting repeated game time, they're getting opportunities that they weren't getting in other provinces.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes whether it's you're not what the coach is looking for or the way the team plays can be a huge factor in how you get on, and you can get lost in your own mind, thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'm not good enough or whatever. And sometimes it's just you're not the right fit for that team at that time or for that coach. And maybe a move is the best thing that ever happened to you. I think there's plenty of stories where it's been the best thing or the opposite. But
Tom Daly has kind of proven that. Tom Daly and even Sammy Arnold as well. Two players that have played brilliantly for Connacht, and I think it shows people that, you know, it's become more normal to move from province to province, but even from people to just look abroad maybe a little bit earlier. And I know it's easy for me to say after staying in one club, but I think sometimes when the opportunities aren't there, you just need a window. Like when some guys just get one game to impress, and whether it goes well, if it goes badly, they're not in for quite a period of time. You know, can knock the confidence in that. So sometimes moving on where there's more opportunities can be the best call, and you can see those guys are great examples of that.
Yeah, another man who took a great opportunity at the weekend was Craig Casey. He was involved in that Munster win over Edinburgh. He just plays with such energy. I don't know, did you get to see a lot of the game, but even when he got substituted off in the 70th minute, you know, he was sprinting off the field. He just has energy. I actually read a tweet saying that if Craig Casey was given out the vaccines, the whole country would be vaccinated at this stage, that he's just so energetic with everything that he does.
Yeah, he was very lively in that Edinburgh game. He scored an important try there where he dummied and went just underneath the posts. And yeah, as you said, he was sprinting back. He obviously trying to prove a point to Andy Farrell that you know, he's ready for the Italian game. And yeah, just good to see young guys coming in like that with high energy. And I think the likes of, you know, Gavin Coombs and Casey in Munster, it's great to see Munster producing some really good homegrown guys, because, you know, that's what you want in the home provinces across the board.
I think on the other end of that, Billy Holland getting his 240th cap, I think, is great to see. He's a top bloke, and an absolute servant for Munster. So on the other end of the spectrum, one for the old guys, he's yeah. I don't think he scores many tries, but he's definitely a serious operator.
It's not all about the young guns, what you're trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something like that.
I think he equaled Ronan O'Gara's record, didn't he, of 240 caps.
Did he? Was that it?
So. I'm not sure who the top one is, but, you know, is there many in
Leinster? Callan, I think.
Dunica, is it? Yeah. Is there many in Leinster with that kind of, those numbers?
Gordon Darcy and Jamie Heaslip would have been right up there.
Yeah.
I'm sure Jamie Heaslip probably would have got on for another 50 if he hadn't got that back injury. So, yeah.
Dev is up there as well.
Big Dev would be around there, yeah. Sure, I think Dev, the only time Dev has been injured his whole career was I think it was the morning of a game. He cut his finger really badly at home. Something fell, I don't know whether it was on the glass or something like that. And he was fine, he played the game, but like, I think he's only missed a handful of games through his whole career. I think in the second row, he's just so durable. So
he only ever injures people. He doesn't get injured himself. Like never, never on the massage beds, never in the physio room.
So he's not one of those guys that's constantly, you know, doing his yoga, taking care of himself, getting his prehab in. So like, what is it? What's the secret to not getting injured?
Whatever Dev's doing, you bottle it up.
I think his bones are just a different density than ours. When you're that big, you know.
Yeah, he's on a different plane to everyone else. So he's just kneeing people, elbowing people, but never taking any damage himself.
All the dangerous parts are too high up that people can't even get to.
Yeah, it must be it. But whatever it is, he needs to bottle it and sell it because he's been available for his full career, which is unbelievable.
That is, that's mental. Finally, it's been widely reported that the Jaguars, who reached the Super Rugby final in 2019, are now looking to get involved with the Guinness Pro 14. The proposal from the Argentinian Rugby Union would see the Jaguars, based in Bilbao, where you guys won the 2018 Champions Cup, next season. What do you make of that, the Pro 14 going to the Pro 15, or however many teams they want to bring into this?
Yeah, from my perspective, I think it's that's the first I've heard of it, but I think it'd be pretty cool. I remember friends asking me what I thought about the South African teams joining, and like I was like, it's class. Like, you get to experience new places, playing against different teams, and like, I'd never been to South Africa before, and I'd obviously never played against any of the teams. So that experience alone is class. So I think it's only positive, really, if it did happen now. Whether it does or not, I have no idea.
Could be a good night out as well for the away trip there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, something a bit different.
A little bit better than Rodney Parade.
Yeah, slightly better. Similar conditions.
Slightly better weather as well. That was good.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's it for part one. We'll take a short break and we will look ahead to round three of the Six Nations. To take you there, here's a little clip of the UK's House of Rugby show as Lee McKenzie reunited Sean O'Brien and Jonathan Davies with All Blacks legend Jerome Kino.
I just want to say, Sean, are you and Jerome okay? Because I think the last thing that a lot of people will remember is basically you coming off worse. Yeah. And it's not often we say that.
Well, I've come off worse in this battle a few times, so I have to mind you. But that one, yeah, that one was... I had a little bony fragment floating in my shoulder, and I was like, of all people, I didn't... The one person you don't want to hit you going into a ruck is Jerome. And he caught me in the sweet spot that day in the third test, and I was in the change room at half time going, fucking hell, no, this is me done for the day, because I just had no power left in my arm. But someone you want to be trying to avoid on the field more so than them. I'd rather be playing with him, to be fair. But we've always had a good catch up afterwards, so there's never been any beef, as they say, with us.
Jerome, how do you remember it?
I think I almost did more damage to it after the game because I felt so bad. I saw him in the sling and I was just like, man, I'm so sorry. I didn't, because I'd known before that he had problems with his shoulder, and then seeing him in the sling after the game, I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate.
I don't think the sling stayed on too long, Jerome. I think the next day there's a picture of me with Kyle Sinclair. I don't think I had a sling on anyway.
I don't think I saw the sling on at the hotel later on.
No. I think the few pints helped me to numb the pain.
Foxy, have you managed to stay out of trouble when it comes to Jerome? Do you just run the opposite way in the backs?
Well, I tried my very best for years, but I think one test in Cardiff, I think Aaron Smith gets penalised, and I try to get the ball off him, and he's like trying, he's keeping hold of it, and I start like pushing him because he's the smallest guy in the pitch, and then I just feel this big fist grab me on the shirt. He says, don't touch him. I was like, no problem whatsoever, I won't touch him. I didn't get badly injured as Sean, thankfully.
I remember that. There's a funny story to that. Earlier on that year, I think Aaron got roughed up by a couple of second rolls from the Springboks. And we reviewed that game, and Steve Hansen was just like, there's so many forwards standing around Aaron, and you guys let this happen. Don't let it happen again. No, he didn't mean like throw punches or anything. So when that happened, I was like, this is my chance to be able to make up for it.
Yeah, there's no second rows, just a pasty Welshman there for one of them. So happy days.
Well, I never like those situations anyway. I like to conserve my energy and stand back a bit. Yeah. But had to look after my halfback.
House of Rugby Ireland. Tell us what you think by comment and rating us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Sean O'Brien was there talking about Jerome Kano leaving him in a heap during the Lions All Blacks third test in 2017. When it comes to the hardest you've ever been tackled, what instantly jumps to mind, James?
I think Sean, he's a fact checker with some of the stories he's coming out with that I've heard, the shoops, people talking about.
That story about the shoops never happened.
Never.
Like, I was
never.
In Leinster. I'm pretty sure. And also, him saying that people from Dublin didn't know where Tullow was is also incorrect.
So yeah.
A few tall tales going on there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like him to let the truth get in the way of a good story.
But, you guys are both from Kildare. You shouldn't have anything about that.
Exactly. Sure, I was in the part of the time. I was like, that did not happen. But yeah. Anyway, a bit of salt and pepper in the story.
He's looking for headlines.
Yeah, I reckon mine is, it was actually me tackling someone. So we were playing against Northampton, and Courtney Laws, like he put in a few like late shots and tens, and you know, I was looking and been like, oh, I'm going to come on and absolutely whack this lad. Like, looks a bit of a beanpole. Like, never played against him. I was like, yeah, come on, like, hitting the smallest lads on the pitch. Like, I'm going to absolutely melt him. Anyway, come on the pitch, and ball's coming off the edge. And, like, it was going to 10, and you could see it was going to 10 was going to play it to him. So I'm like, right, I have, like, this is perfect. Ball's going to be there for ages. I'm going to get full steam at him. And literally hit him with everything I had. And I genuinely reckon he didn't even know I touched him. Like, he just, like, dropped his hip into me. And I was like in a heap on the ground, and like physio comes over, and like my arm is like stuck in this position, twitching. And he's like, yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah, play on there. I'm like, yeah, gee, I don't think I can here. He's like, yeah, you'll be all right. But it was definitely a humbling one, thinking I could whack him, but he genuinely steamrolled me with his hit. It was like a little flick of the ribs.
Man, G's got a bit of a habit of that, because so Gareth, we call him G, he's our head physio and has been for years, a top guy and great physio, but. For medics coming on, obviously at times, there's so much going on between people down looking for water and all the rest. You know, obviously, initially they come and they want to make sure or see why the player's there and what's wrong. But I was we played against, it was against Glasgow years ago. I think it was the final of the Pro 14 in 2013 maybe, or 14, I'm not sure. I can't remember which one. But I hit someone in a tackle on my right side, and it just didn't feel right afterwards. And there was like, I felt my face, and there was blood coming in the side of my face. And I felt my ear, and my ear was like, it was like hanging on by the bottom of my ear, which is obviously pretty horrible. And the feeling of it is like, oh, Jesus. So G comes on, and he like kind of grabs me by the face and looks at me and goes, what's wrong with you? And I was like, gee, my ear is hanging off my head. Like, can you not see that? Blood just squirting out the side of my head. But
did he just tape you up? Is that where the headband came from?
He just taped me up, yeah. So I played on, and then I got it stitched, like 30 internal and external stitches. So from then on, I just had to wear the headband every week.
And was that a big blow, big tackle, one of your biggest hits, or was it just like...
Oh, sorry, that was... I actually just veered off there for that, talking about Gareth, but the biggest hit was probably also actually when I tried to hit someone. So I tried to hit a guy against Edinburgh. He made a long break, a guy called Damien Hoyland, and he changed direction at the last second, and I was in a position to hit him quite hard, and because he changed direction, I hit him kind of here and went up. It was a high tackle, in fairness, and it didn't look great, but when I hit him, my jaw hit his shoulder. So I was out cold almost before I hit the ground. So I definitely came out of that tackle a little bit worse than he did.
He probably one of those a season in my time thing. You'd like, you were always hit of the year. It was a highlight reel of you and Issa just whacking lads.
I think Jerome Kanan was playing club rugby in Japan when you played the All Blacks in 2012. Did you ever come across him in club rugby for Toulouse?
I didn't, but Tracy actually would have when we were playing them over the last couple of seasons when Jerome Kanan went there. Because we played them in a 3-test tour in New Zealand and Kano wasn't there at the time. He wasn't in the All Blacks team at the time. It was McCaw, Liam Messam and Kieran Reid. So thankfully he wasn't involved at that stage. But James would probably tell you what, because he played against Leinster and was extremely good in a couple of games. But
yeah, we I would have played against him a couple of times, but like... yeah, he's obviously a freak, but we probably had a lot of possession when we beat them in the RDS when he would have been playing, so he probably wouldn't have featured as much. But yeah, they've like a huge pack, and he's definitely like one of their talisman.
He also spoke about how much of a base fee the All Blacks players get for Test Week. He says they'd get the equivalent of £4,000. That pales in comparison to the English players who get around £17,000. Like, how much are players motivated by money?
I think players are motivated by money to an extent. I think you'd be lying if you said they weren't. I think, listen, it's a business at the end of the day from both sides, you know, whether it's Leinster or whether it's the players. You know, you're putting a lot on the line, you know, you're in terms of, you know, your body every week, in terms of training and games. So there's a price, and the price comes with the money that you earn. It is funny that some unions pay more than others. Obviously, the RFU just generate an awful lot more money, and they're in a position to pay guys. But when you hear the difference in match fees there, it's pretty astonishing.
Especially for the All Blacks. Like, is it just more the pride of the jersey then?
Yeah, I'd be surprised now if that was like if they were getting a bit more on the side. But yeah, they definitely commercially, I think being an All Black would definitely be pretty lucrative, I'd say, and they probably get it back in other ways. But yeah, as you said, it's not necessarily fair how it's done. But yeah, I think as far as I think it's probably done on the revenue that. That each country is making from it, so that's how they can afford to pay a bit more. But I don't think anyone would be complaining if they're getting as much as the English players are getting.
No, absolutely not. So, James, we'll come on to you and talk about you and your rugby career. From talking to Fergus earlier, he seems to have a database of stories on you. Have you come prepared with some stories to tell about him? We heard he was an altar boy.
She's trying to turn us against each other here.
It's true, actually. No, I've got nothing.
An angel, altar boy, Fergal.
I know. Nothing too bad. I want nothing. Ferg's always been, he was always one of the kind of guys that would have been sound to the younger lads and put an arm around you.
You're not that much younger, man.
So this story is actually a lie.
You're only three years younger.
Relax. Oh, it's way younger.
Just after coming out of the academy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was talking about being young.
We've had serious crack with Ferg over the years, and in the trenches, on and off the field. No better man.
You played at Loosehead as well. When did you switch to hooker? Why did you switch to hooker?
So played Loosehead, all the way up. And I was third year academy, and I just didn't have the frame, to be honest. And Joe Schmidt pulled me into the office and just said that did I have any aspiration of kind of kicking on and, you know, hoping to play for Ireland or anything like that. And I obviously said I did. So he just said, I think you should try moving to hooker. And that was it. Just started throwing the next day and went from there, really. Probably had a barren period. So I know we were talking about earlier about, you know, guys moving, and it'd been a good thing. It was probably good that I didn't move and didn't get pushed in or a chance. Not that I didn't deserve a chance, but, you know, that I wasn't kind of trial too early, because it did probably take me 3 or 4 years before I felt properly comfortable playing, you know, like... The first kind of 2 years, every time the ball kicked out, I was kind of like,
oh, yips.
Oh no, yeah, oh no, like, you know, having to go over and thing. But you just get confident then with it, and the more you practice and all that. But it was definitely, it took me a while to get used to it, but it was, you know, clearly the best decision that could happen. So very grateful to him for that.
Absolutely. You both are Kildare men. We won't talk about the GAA in Kildare, but how big is the rugby scene now in Kildare? I suppose a lot of it comes from the school's rugby side of things.
Yeah, huge. You know, Newbridge College doing the double, the Corona double, is huge for the school because, you know...
Phantom double.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Did they share the actual trophy? Never got played.
I don't know, we'll just take the win.
Yeah, you'll take it. You'll take it.
But yeah, no, like, and the school's come such a long way and credit to, where credit's due to Pob, the principal, and to, you know, to... all the Jono and all the backroom staff, like there's too many to list off, and Johnny Murphy and Dave Brew and all who would have been there when I was there, and they've done such an amazing job on building in the school into what it is now, and actual contenders in the Senior Cup, and I have to mention Naas Rugby Club as well. It would have been where I started off, and you know, would call my home club. They were brilliant to me all the way through, and even Dave had a serious jump up the ranks in the last few years, and it's brilliant to see. And all the kind of lads now are finishing up or going there instead of going to Dublin clubs, which is great.
Yeah, really good. How important is the school system or clubs like Naas, I suppose, for the development of Leinster rugby?
Oh, they're key. I think, you know, the guys that come into the fact that Leinster can pick the guys they want from the Leinster Schools Senior Cup and just bring them into their academy. So some of them are, you know, almost ready-made pros in the way they, you know, prepare every week and the way they train and the way they live. The academy system has always been great in Leinster, but I do think that they do have a massive advantage because the school system in Ireland is very good, but it's the best in Leinster. You know, there's no real argument there about that. So, very, very lucky for Leinster to be able to pick up those guys. And I do think it's good, though, to see guys still breaking through from the youths. You know, you have a really that really good centre from Naas who's just breaking through, Jamie Osborne, and James just talked about Naas there. Just, it's encouraging to see those guys breaking through because people forget that in the schools, within the schools rugby, they're training on the pitch four times a week and then a game at the weekend, and that they could be doing two or three gym sessions, whereas the youth guys go to school, they might play Gaelic football, but then they train twice a week. So to see those talents still coming through, you know, you've got some, you know, rich history of great youth guys that have come through, the likes of Sean O'Brien and Tadhg Furlong and others. So it's good to see another bright light coming out.
And is there ridiculous rivalry among those clubs, you know, in Kildare, or would you be friendly then? Would a lot of them playing in Naas rugby clubs? So would you play your club rugby together and then go off in completely different schools teams then?
Sorry, what do you...
Just, would there be rivalry among the schools, like huge rivalry among those schools? Or would, you know, would you play club rugby together in Naas rugby club and you're all, you know, it's friendly rivalry?
Yeah, it's friendly. Well, it depends who it is. Like, it's definitely lads I've hated over the years, but there's a lot of lads, like, you just get over it, really, especially when you leave school. Like, I never understand people who carry that on, you know. Like, you find people you probably hate on the pitch end up being someone you'd be really good mates with once you get to know them, because you probably hate them because one, they're probably good, and the other is that they're probably more like you than you realise. Like, you're probably not the nicest person
you
to
and Gilly.
Against, so I don't know.
You and Gilly.
Yeah, I mean, the guillotine, yeah.
Conor Gilson was in Leinster and then he moved over to London Irish, but you lads would have played against each other.
Yeah, we locked horns a few times. So
you would have hated him initially and then got
No, I didn't hate Gilly, but geez, there was plenty of lads in his team I did hate, though. No, he's a great leader and a great lad, and I would have lived him, had good crack on him over the years. But you have rivalries, your school rivalries. There's actually a fella, Paul Mullen, I'm actually not sure what he's up to now, but I played against him in school, and we were digging the head off each other in a game in Newbridge College, and went to Ireland under 18s camp, and I was rooming with him like that. Like,
the chances.
Honestly, the most awkward thing ever. Like, he was there first, And
especially because you don't know. I don't know about you guys, but you never know who you get until like you open the door and you're like, hey.
Yeah. So I just went in, put the bag down. It's pretty like
round two.
So that was a funny one. But yeah, again, like he got over it then, and like it was probably the best thing that happened to us. We laughed about it and got on with it. But
he would have held a grudge for life otherwise.
No. I think he poked the head off me again and next time. I didn't hold a grudge anyway.
Put manners on you.
No, you're definitely not holding a grudge. You played in the 2011 Junior World Cup or World Championship, and there were some great lads on that team.
Yeah, I think pretty much the whole starting 15 went professional, and we definitely underperformed for the team we had. But we had a great team.
Like Furlong, Marmion, Jackson,
yeah,
Mackin.
Yeah, Ian Henderson, Conway, Luke Marshall, yeah, literally like the Tiernan O'Halloran, like there was so many top end lads. So great crack we had, but we definitely underperformed, which is definitely a regret. But everyone kicked on and did well.
Yeah, Leinster rugby, it was everyone. You actually can't watch a game without someone saying, like, you know, the Leinster rugby production line or the Leinster rugby conveyor belt of talent coming through, and it is the case in almost every position. There's four top quality, if not more, hookers in that Leinster squad.
Yeah, it's great. great for the coaches. It seems to be, they were going through a good period. I think everyone ebbs and flows, club-wise and with the player pool that comes in. But yeah, definitely in hooker at the minute, it would be nicer if it wasn't as competitive. Yeah. But it keeps us, all of us, on our toes, and without giving you a boring answer, like, it's, I understand how hungry they are, because I was in their shoes not that long ago, and they're talented lads, in fairness. So it really does, like, gets you out of bed in the morning, so it keeps you hungry.
Does it mean you have to be like, you have to have your A game every single time you step onto that field?
Yeah, well, like, I don't try to have a bad game ever, really, but
every second,
it just means the consequences are just like greater, I suppose, than if you were nailed down with no one behind you. So it just means, like, you're, you know, if you have a bad game, like, you know it's coming, like, you know that the Grim Reaper's calling on Monday morning to let you know.
Curly
you're
finger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We spoke about that last week, for avoiding Leo.
Yeah, I was saying about dodging him sometimes if I knew he was going to not pick me. Just go for a bit of a longer walker in the gym when it's longer.
Lads who laps at the gym on a Monday morning trying to avoid eye contact. Yeah. But
lads jumping into cupboards and stuff. But yeah, I think that in Leinster, that culture has come in, particularly probably when Stuart arrived, about, you know, training at a certain intensity that you should be ready for the games. You know, it's obviously just, it's contact, but at times, cardio-wise, it would be tougher in Stuart sessions than some matches, and that's what the environment he tries to create, so that when you do get your opportunity, you can go well. And it's tricky though, because if some guys are trying to break in and they get their one window and it doesn't go too well, there's so many players. You know, James just said there's four international standard hookers there at the moment. Like, one of the guys has a bad game, they might not get back in for a month. So that can be the frustrating thing about it.
Yeah. Some bad news after we did the podcast last week was we broke about Dan Levy having his surgery. How gutted, I suppose, are you guys as a squad for him having to go back and have surgery and miss the remainder of the season?
Yeah, absolutely devastated for him. He's a really good friend of mine, and I think, you know, like, no one wants to see someone close to them have any sort of setbacks or adversity. But it's nowhere near as bad as the last thing that he's already come through. So he's just about him stomaching the process of getting through it, and no better man to get back and play really well. I actually think his last game against Scarlets, like, it's not as if he went off injured, you know. I think that's kind of like shows you the level of it. It wasn't a catastrophic injury this time around, but I thought he was brilliant. It was probably the best he's been since he's been back. So at least he knows now he can get back to that level, and be excited to see him getting back, you know, in a green shirt in the future as well.
Yeah, hopefully. And was he really diligent with his return to play and his, like, everything? Did he tick every box along the way?
Yeah, well, I suppose I was still in the squad when Dan was coming back, and the injury happened. I think it was something like in around 18 months before that, and you know, that horrific injury did pick up against Ulster in the Aviva that day, and you know, sure, there was some tough conversations had for Dan with specialists and all the rest as to whether he was going to be able to get back. But honestly, that coming back from that injury, from as far as my whole career, and seeing anyone come back from injuries was the most impressive comeback I've ever seen. You know, he didn't mope about the place. He just got back out. Once he got the operation, he just got back on with it. He had just missed out on a World Cup as well, which he definitely would have gone to, and probably been one of the best players at it, and would have been such an important player for Ireland. But yeah, as James said there, it's great to see him, you know, getting back to himself. It was always going to take a couple of months, and I think that his form was really picking up. So thankfully, this is just something minor he's going to get done, and I've no doubt he'll play for Ireland again.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to talking about playing for Ireland, you 6 caps for Ireland, but haven't played a test since 2017. How encouraged were you to get called back into that Six Nations squad last autumn? Lots of competition, but you're still targeting that green jersey?
Yeah, it's so close, so far away. Like the, I think, you know, like if you're starting for any of the provinces, like you're within touching distance of it, and that's like the main focus really, is to try to be starting for Leinster, and if you're starting for Leinster, you're in with a serious shout of getting an opportunity. So, try focus on that, and anytime you get called in, it's a huge honour, and genuinely, you know, cherish every time you get it. The Nuggets always tell me about his omelets in the
shower.
In the shower, yeah. So you got to cherish the cherish the good times while you have them.
That's what it's for. You got your first cap back in against Canada, and the week after they beat the All Blacks. What was that week like getting your first cap? You know, were the squad on a high? What kind of environment was it like?
It was obviously, like, everyone you asked that question, it's like surreal feeling, and it's class. Well, it's pretty like a fall from grace at the end of the week. We were doing our pitch session, about to, like, bags were already packed, ready to go to Chicago for the game or whatever. And like, as the pitch session finished, Conor Murray, like, a bit of a tight calf or whatever, so they changed their plans on who they were bringing as a reserve, and I got a tap on the shoulder, and like, yeah, you're actually going home now, not going to Chicago. So have a good weekend.
And you were due to go otherwise?
You're due to go over, yeah.
Oh, my thing. God.
So,
but Connor was actually fine for the match.
He was fine, yeah.
You need to take that up with him.
Yeah, actually need to take it up with him.
Missed the best night out
of
the
best, right now, Connor Murray.
Them, like, over with the... It was in the Bulls arena and all that sort of thing.
And they just won the World Series.
I know,
as well,
yeah.
Before
like,
that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
cheers, Mer.
Yeah, thanks for Mer, for that one. But it would have been a cool experience, but sure, yeah, it was a good fall from grace. But no, I did the first cap was class.
And it must have been slightly tainted though after that week. Like, that's hard.
I'm not gonna lie, it was pretty. Yeah, ruined my week. I don't know, but, like, with his part.
You seem to have gotten over it
though. Yeah, oh, there's no chip and shoulder. I haven't carried on. But like, that's rugby for you though. Like, life in general, it humbles you fairly quickly.
That's brilliant. We'll get on to our Six Nations preview. Italy versus Ireland at the weekend. Andy Farrell says he will go with the strongest possible team that he thinks could beat Italy. Do you still think that there'll be a lot of changes to the squad?
I think I said this on the last show, that because there's probably been a few forced changes in a few positions, he'll probably might try and get a bit of consistency, because the level of performances probably haven't been where he would have wanted them to get to. So, but I would like to see him try a few guys out there, give a few guys opportunities. You know, if you've got the likes of a Craig Casey in there, you know, this is the first opportunity. You know, if you're going to put him in the extended Six Nations squad, why not? This is the time to maybe use him. And maybe if you have him on the bench, or you use him, or else give him a start. You know, I think give him a start maybe with Johnny. And Johnny could kind of, you know, lead him through the week as the halfback pairing. I think that would be a nice thing to see. But otherwise, I'm sure it'll be injury dependent as well. It's about how the bodies have gotten through from that French game. It was a bruising encounter, and how the guys went this week. But yeah, there's a few interesting selection calls, I'm sure we'll see.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk this week about Mike Catt's influence of the attack play, and Andy Farrell is now 14 months Ireland are now 14 months under Andy Farrell. What are we looking for in attack from the Irish squad?
Tries. Like that's at the end of the day, we're in the entertainment business, and like we all just want to, that's what Ireland are setting up to do, is to score tries. But international defences are very good, so it is very hard to score tries. So I think any team goes out to put on a good show and try to play the most exciting brand they can.
It's not simple. Like you said, the defensive lines, there's very little gaps. There's very little mistakes made these days. Like what do Leinster do? What are teams looking at? Like how are they planning to get over? It's not just, it can't just be gain line and go the whole length of the pitch. What are teams trying to do these days?
Well, the defence has changed. It's evolved over the last kind of, what would you say, like 4 years. It's kind of gone from that having your nine kind of sweeping them behind the line to wingers up high and two in the backfield instead of three, which means it's a lot harder to run the ball, and you probably have to kick the ball a bit more, like attacking kicks. And I think that's an area where teams kind of have to attack by kicking the ball, and that's probably frustrating to watch as a supporter, but that's the reason why teams do kick so much. And when you get into the 22, it's just been efficient then and tightening it up. And again, it's not the prettiest thing to watch, but it's the percentage plays, and that's what wins games.
Finally, news from France today that Julien Marchaud and Arthur Vincent are the latest players to test positive for COVID-19. That comes hot on the heels of the other cases, including Antoine Dupont. That's five players now out of the Scotland game next weekend. That surely, has the potential to open up the championship after hearing those players missing from the squad.
Yeah, it'd be a huge blow for them. And you also don't know, how many close contacts within the squad those guys will affect as well. Because if they're playing by the book, you can be sure there's a couple of guys that might be taken out as well. So, very disappointing for the French because they were flying. But it's just what the Scots need after getting beaten by Wales. So, yeah, I think we talked before the championship started, and we talked about, probably England and France, and we were a bit predictable with who we thought would go well and win it. But it's just such an open championship. So it's made things even more exciting, even in a peculiar way.
Yeah, I think people will definitely be tuning into that, just because people will, obviously based on Scotland's performances up until now, but also, that's given them an extra opportunity to beat the French, which, it's just making it more interesting. Yeah, like you said, you're putting on a show for people a week in, week out.
Yeah, so both of those sides are, they play an unbelievable brand, but, like the French try against Ireland, that Penno finished off, or, like Finn Russell he can pull passes and kicks.
Stuart Hogg in the form of his life.
Yeah, Stuart Hogg, yeah. He's beaten, I think, like 15 defenders or something like that and so far in the competition. So, it'll be a good one for the neutrals to watch. So, excited to see it.
Absolutely. So, cheers to everybody for watching and listening today. A big thank you to producer Pat, Paul, Dermot, Anthony and everyone that helped in getting this show together. This has been House of Rugby Ireland here on Joe. Slán go fóill.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.